Hello, this is Kendra Brodine, founder and CEO of WomenLawyersOnline.com, and today I am thrilled to bring you a conversation with Jean Gillis. She calls herself a neighborhood lawyer, and I just love the feel of who she is and what she does for her clients. So I'll read her biography, and then we'll bring her live onto the call. Jean Gillis understands that her clients need an attorney who is not only competent, but is also welcoming and appreciative of who they are. After all, the practice of law is not just about the papers, it's about the people and the relationships. The importance of estate planning is a life lesson Jean learned as a child after her father was struck down by a brain aneurysm at the age of 42. Her father remained physically ill for the rest of his life, ultimately succumbing to dementia. Although everyone knew Jean's father, especially being an attorney, that he needed a plan in place to address his incapacity, prepare for his eventual passing, and record his legacy, no planning was ever done. As a result of this unfortunate lack of preparation, Jean and her family suffered financially and spiritually. Jean grew up in the eastern Long Island town of Bridgehampton and then began her higher education at the University of South Florida in Tampa, in Florida, where she earned her Bachelor of Arts degree. Thereafter, she received her Juris Doctor degree with honors from the Thomas Cooley Law School in Lansing, Michigan, where she was a law review editor, merit scholar, and a top-tier graduate. Jean went on to receive her Master of Laws degree from Georgetown University Law Center in Washington, D.C. Jean is admitted to practice in North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, and Massachusetts, and is a member of the Mecklenburg County Bar Association. Jean established the Gillis Law Firm after many years of practicing law at two prominent law firms in Washington, D.C. and Palm Beach, Florida. As a Special Olympics volunteer, certified adult literacy instructor, and a finisher of several marathons, including two Boston marathons, Jean understands that family wealth planning is a journey, not a destination, and that everyone has unique gifts and a special purpose. Jean is committed to being a lifelong trusted advisor for her clients, and she intends to be there for them whenever they need anything, including such things as a basic or comprehensive estate plan, special needs planning, elder law guidance, guardianship, or to compassionately handle their loved one's probate and trust administration. Jean resides in Charlotte with Walter, her husband, best friend, and better half. The Gillis clan also includes Daisy and Lily, who she calls the Legal Beagles, who make life a howling good time. Jean, thank you so much for being here on the call today.
Oh, thank you, Kendra, for having me.
You are very welcome. I'm delighted to get to spend some time with you and to have this conversation rooted in some questions so that listeners can learn. So, and I'm looking forward to learning from your life experience, from your experience as an attorney. So, again, just thank you for the time today.
Absolutely.
Well, why don't we just jump right in. Looking at your past, and it was definitely more than alluded to in your bio, you have some extreme circumstances that happened to you at a very young age. And I'm wondering if actually before we even jump into the first question or if it happens to correspond with the first question. The first question is about balancing work and life, but I'm guessing when the situation happened to your father when you were, did you say 7 years old?
7 years old, 1971.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about that because it's a very powerful story, and I love how the mission of your work comes from that situation that happened with your family.
Well, even to this day, at nearly 46 years of age, every time I tell that story, I get a pain in my solar plexus in my stomach because the older I get, I really realize what an impact it would have had. And coming home from a friend's house one Saturday afternoon, walking through the driveway of my childhood home, and my brother was running toward me screaming, "Daddy's collapsed, we have to get to the hospital." And when I realized that if my father had passed away from that aneurysm, again at age 42, in the prime of life, completely unexpectedly, just doing, you know, his thing on a Saturday afternoon, playing golf with his friends, had he died, or perhaps worse, been incapacitated, my mother had no job skills, no college education. She had no ability to work outside of the home in order to support four young children at home. And when I think about all these things and then, you know, all through my father's life being, you know, physically ill on and off and just not putting a plan in place, always taking care of other people and not tending to his own needs, it really would have left my mother in a terrible mess. And when he finally did pass away, my mother was left virtually penniless. And when she finally passed away, she died in a very unhappy state of mind. So I made it my mission in life to make sure that what happened to me and to my family will never happen to any other family. And I'm doing that one family at a time.
Well, it gives me chills to think what you went through with your family, certainly in that catastrophic moment with your father, as you described coming up the driveway, but then certainly for years past that, based on the planning or lack thereof. And you said your father was an attorney, too, and it's one of those, maybe the cobbler's children have no shoes. We think of ourselves as attorneys, and we forget to take care of our own legal situations. So
exactly.
It sounds like it was terribly hard on your family, but the silver lining might be that you are making these changes for families, so many families, I'm sure, with your work. Like you said, changing their lives and their what they have in place, one family at a time. So, I think that's an amazingly powerful story, and yet I can just hear the passion in your voice for the work that you do.
Well, estate planning disasters are very easy to dismiss as happening to somebody else. It's in human nature to procrastinate about something like that, and it's also very easy to only focus on the financial part of it, like, oh, all this money going to probate fees or going to hospitals, all of that. But the real damage happens on the emotional and spiritual level because of all the family drama that ensued when my father came to the end of his life, and then all the things that needed to be taken care of after he passed away. There was so much arguing among my siblings and I that damage became a permanent thing. And it's been over 15 years since we've spoken. It's like everybody, you know, once my mother passed away, everybody just kind of went into their own corner and lived their life. It's really the damage that hurts the most is the emotional and spiritual damage. And again, I don't want that to happen to any other family.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it's so true that because we don't like to think about these things. We don't like to think about death and dying. And I remember when my husband and I had our will drawn up, we have two small daughters, and you don't want to do it because you don't want to think about those things. And yet the alternative is so unattractive that, heaven forbid something were to happen, what would happen to our children? I mean, we're relatively young. It's not like we're loaded with assets, but it's more my children that I'm worried about. And as you said, later in life, what happens to your children then when they're grown and there's fighting and there's anger and there's disagreement about maybe what your intentions would have been? It's so preventable by sort of swallowing hard and thinking about the thing you don't want to think about just for a little while to avoid all of that grief and pain and anger. And like you said, to not speak with siblings for years after, and it's so avoidable. But it's amazing work you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. And really, estate planning, it's not something that you do for yourself. I mean, on a certain level you do, but you're really doing it for the people, your loved ones who you leave behind, because you're not going to be around to know when your plan kicks in.
Right, you're gone.
And,
that's right.
And really, you know, people need to get out of the concept, the mindset of estate planning is death planning. It's life planning.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a part of life.
True.
And it's a good thing to do, really good thing to do.
It is. Like you said, when you can flip it around and think that you're doing it for others. You know, that was what, for, like I said, for my husband and I, when I could think, we're doing it for our daughters, we're doing it for our parents, we're doing it for our siblings, we're doing it for others in our life so that they don't have any more to deal with at the time of our passing, when that happens, than they would already have to be. So it's a gentle thing to be doing for other people. So I think that perspective, and it sounds like that's something that you're helping your clients understand, that we're not going to sit around for 2 hours and talk about death, but we are going to make your life as easy as it can be when your loved one does pass, you know, for those children or siblings or relatives or friends, whoever it may be. They have enough to deal with. This is something that doesn't have to be on the table.
Exactly. And while it might be a subject for another phone call, I know you had said that you and your husband have a will set up, but you do need more than a will, but that may be outside the context of our
maybe we talk about that. Well, we have guardianship and all that taken care of, too. So, yeah, I think we're set, but maybe we do have another call that's not recorded and broadcast live. But no, I appreciate that. And just, again, the fact that you would even say that, it goes a long way to say that I can tell how much you really care about families, and like you said, changing one family at a time and making that difference that is a subtle difference, and as you said, people dismiss it sometimes, but the work of estate planning attorneys and folks who deal with those kind of big life moments, it's not just about weddings and adoptions. There's an important legal facet to death and dying and those end-of-life choices. So I just appreciate what you're doing, and I'm sure your clients do as well. Well, with that, let's move into the questions, and I'm sure we'll sort of meander around and talk more about some of these things at that time. But I'm wondering, as you were going through some challenges growing up, I'm sure starting at the age of 7, and it sounds like with your father and your mother ultimately, I'm wondering if balancing that work and life, I'm wondering if that's something that maybe was thrust upon you at a young age, and so you've always sort of been good at it or felt like it was a part of how you operated, or if there was maybe at that time or at another time that you felt there was a critical point where you decided to do something different, to make different choices to balance out your work and life.
Always from the time I was a teenager, even, you know, from my first job, I always had a very good work ethic, you know, always get up early, get an early start on the day, and, you know, work till the job gets done. And while I was in law school and college, I didn't have to work during the course of the school year, which was helpful to me. It's easier to just concentrate on one thing and do it well. When I did move on to Georgetown for my master's degree, at that point, I was working full-time and taking classes 3 nights a week. And, oh, boy, time management was absolutely critical at that point. Every moment of time had to count. And part of, you know, time management, of course, is setting your priorities. Who and what is the most important to you? And during that time in Washington, in D.C., you know, I wasn't married and I wasn't involved in a relationship, so it was strictly work, school, and that's pretty much it, and maybe get some sleep in between if I could. Once I did get married, and the more things you add onto your plate, you know, relationship, marriage, children, you have to cut the pieces of that pie ever so smaller, and make those decisions, you know, really, really count. And my most recent experience with trying to balance my work and life was, you know, being newly married, working full time, and studying for the bar exam. And you know, you have to have a good support system around you, which fortunately my husband does do, because every move you make is critical. It's got to be done right the first time. There's no do over.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, and it sounds like there were definitely times in your educational history, and then, as you said, and I just had that picture of those increasingly small pieces of the pie when you add in different people, different relationships, different responsibilities into life, and we stretch ourselves thinner and thinner, that it becomes even more important to figure out how to balance or at least integrate that increasing number of pieces of our life and make it work into one more whole, holistic way of being.
And I give so much credit to women who do have children at home because, you know, you're really working 3 jobs at that point. You know, you're doing your lawyer thing. You're trying to work at a successful marriage and then raise good people, you know, your children. And you can spread yourself very thin. And I've gotten to the point now, just being so busy with work and wanting to keep my marriage as happy as possible, if the house doesn't get vacuumed for 2 weeks, I kind of don't care.
That's right. You have to let some things go.
Exactly.
And maybe that'll be something that we get into as well in terms of just the lessons or the strategies that you have for making it work. But before we get to that point, I'm wondering if there is a big challenge or a big struggle that you've experienced, or what would you just say is the hardest part of trying to integrate those different facets of your life?
I think the hardest thing for me, and especially so when I was first starting out in my legal career, was not having a family member who could really help me out. You know, again, relating back to the story of my father, it just would have been so helpful that once I graduated and passed the bar exam, to be able to have a trusted person, and who better than a father or you know, a mother, mentor me. And that's a component that is my greatest struggle, because I think women, and I don't mean to generalize, but women sometimes can find it very hard to ask for help. I think we put this unrealistic expectation on ourselves that we can do it all and we don't need anybody else's help. And I learned through the struggle of just trying to do everything myself and navigate my own way through this journey of life that it's okay to ask for help. And it's okay to even ask someone who is an acquaintance or a business acquaintance for help or for advice, because people who are successful, and I don't mean just financially successful, I mean in their spirit they are successful people and they want to give back. Their heart is open, their hand is open, the door is open. They want to help you. They want to give back. They want to help somebody else become a success.
I think that's exactly true. And there's that spirit of giving that most likely had something to do with their success, was if they were willing to give. They did go the extra mile with their clients or whoever it was that they were serving, which is what created that success, and it's just the way they operate. So and like you now, the way you're giving of your time, your advice, and your experience to women lawyers out there who don't know you, who you've never met, but you're giving to them. It's just a sign to me that someone does have that kind of more deeply rooted success. And that's what makes them successful in life, is that spirit of giving. And they're really willing to be a resource. But like you said, you just have to ask.
You just have to ask. And if you go through life, like if you even like take your hand right now, or even the listeners out there, if they're holding their hand in a fist, if your hand's in a fist, nothing's going to come in. Nothing's going to come to you. And if your hand is closed, nothing's going to come out. So you can't get and you can't give. So you should always approach each new experience with an open hand and an open mind, and you'd be amazed at what can happen.
That is a beautiful metaphor, the hand, that we're both giving and receiving, and when we close it, we shut ourselves off to the ability to give and the ability to receive. It's a cycle, and ideally we have both going on in our life all the time.
Absolutely, and again, it's just, training myself, you know, opening up my mind to ask for help and not thinking that, well, because I don't have somebody to help me, I guess I have to do it myself. Well, if you don't have the person you want to help you, then you have to go find somebody else and then find someone else from there and so forth.
It's so true, though, that the resources are available. And sometimes it's a little bit harder to find them. We have to search a little bit more. But in actuality, it's just amazing to me how infrequently people make the ask. Just get their courage up and maybe make that ask when it is a little bit uncomfortable, but then they are so often receive a yes, be it asking for help or mentorship or even just at a restaurant asking for something. If you don't ask, you'll never know if you could have gotten what you really needed or wanted, and there's no harm in the asking. The worst thing people can say is no. So like you said, when you really need assistance in some way or mentorship or advice or just to draw someone from someone's wisdom or experience, just make the ask.
Ask first, and don't just see what happens. And if the person says no, if they're not willing to help you, then you've probably learned something about that person.
I think you did. That's right. That's exactly right. Well, and I'm wondering, as you thought through some of the questions that we're going to talk about, would you say that that's your biggest lesson, or do you have some other lessons to share?
I would say yes, that is my biggest lesson. Ask for help. Ask, keep asking, and ask again. The second thing, and maybe even just part and parcel with the biggest lesson, they might be on the same line as the number one, remember to say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Say thank you even when you don't think you have to say thank you. And when you find out that perhaps something really wonderful has happened in your benefactor's life, or perhaps something even really bad, reach out to the family. You know, send a note of congratulations. Send a sympathy card. Send flowers to the hospital. Because people always will remember a lesson that was ingrained in me actually from my mother is always write a thank you card, because people may not always care if you do, but they'll certainly remember when you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can be parlayed into something even bigger than that. It's people will always remember that, oh, yeah, she was there when he got sick. She sent flowers or she sent a note. She sincerely offered her help, what she can do for us. And people appreciate that. And it's not doing it with the hope of getting something in return. It's just that's as human beings what we should do for one another.
I completely agree. And I think we have to remember how easy it can be. It's not just doing those small things that really matter to people. I keep boxes of thank yous just sitting here next to my desk and a roll of stamps, because really when somebody does something and I want to say thank you, I need to make it easy on myself, but it really takes me just a minute or two to dash off a note, throw a stamp on it, and throw it in the mailbox. But that note to express my gratitude lets people know that I appreciate what they've done, and it doesn't take a lot. I don't want people to feel like it takes a ton of time or effort to be in that spirit of thankfulness and gratitude. It can be very easy, and it feels really good. It feels, to me, when I put that stamp on it and I send it off, I love that feeling in my own self. It feels like I'm giving someone a hug or a thank you or just expressing how much what they did for me meant. And it feels good on both ends.
And also, too, for women helping other women, we really do need to help each other. I'm a big fan of the book The Feminine Mystique by mm-hmm. Betty Friedan. And, you know, I grew up in that whole era of seeing my mother not working only because that was what her destiny was supposed to be. And then my sister, she was the first wave of attorneys going into law school. She graduated from law school in 1972. And I see then, you know, women really helping women. I see it less now. It's more like the whole Mean Girls, Lindsay Lohan movie. You got to help each other out. You have to. I mean, we're never going to get to the point where we need to be if we're not helping each other out. And I was actually, just a few weeks ago, just so dismayed, and this is disregarding any type of political affiliation or anything like that, with Elena Kagan being put into nomination for the Supreme Court Justice. And they published that photograph of her with the softball, playing softball, with the implication being that she is a lesbian. Now, I don't feel bad, because the first thing that popped into my mind was, darn it, when you're a woman, you can't win either way. If you're playing softball, and it might have just been simply, a company picnic or the school she was at or whatever.
Right.
If you're doing that, if you're not like the traditional notion of femininity, then you'll get badmouthed for that. Or if you're a very attractive, in the common mode of what men perceive as being attractive, then they wonder how you got to where you got. And I think with that, those polar opposites, women really need to nurture each other up through the workplace. They need to mentor each other.
Exactly. I love the idea of mentorship and of connecting with other women, because we do share that sisterhood somehow. There's something unique about the experience. And you and I, we're both happily married. I love my husband. Men are fabulous. It's not that. But there's something different about the experience of being a woman, being a professional woman, trying to figure out the way our minds work, the way we try to do that juggle and the integration, which is so important to us, And yet it is a challenging integration. We can learn from and draw upon what others have. And like you said about Elena Kagan, it is shocking to me that women will pick apart other women so quickly. And I think we can support one another. It's not about politics. If you want to disagree with her politics or her rule, if anything that she's done legally or professionally, go ahead if you're going to base criticism on that. But if we stoop to a place where we're picking at someone's activities or the way they look or those much more superficial attributes of a person, then we're not doing anyone any favors and we're actually demeaning what we hope to achieve as women, which is to be taken seriously in the workplace.
Well, exactly. And when I first started out in my career, I was working at a smaller law firm, a few years into my career, smaller law firm. And there was a female attorney there, and she was probably about 10 or 15 years older than me. And she had very high billings, and I thought, okay, this is someone who seems to be really going places. I'd like to, you know, try to align myself with her, maybe learn from her a little bit. And I tried very hard to ingratiate myself to her. And finally she said to me that she just really wasn't interested in helping me because the two attorneys who were on the hiring committee, one of them wanted me to work there and the other one didn't. Mm. And this woman said to me that the one who didn't want to hire me didn't think I had enough brains, and the one that did want to hire me liked my personality. And the next thing that she said to me was, so they went for the personality, that's how you got the job. And it was so hurtful to me that, you know, not even giving me a chance, and you know, I'm not a dum-dum by any means.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I just thought to myself, clearly I've hit a brick wall with this person. She's not interested in helping anyone. But another part of me felt sorry for her that she played into that mean girl self-preservation mode that if she helps someone else, she's going to drag herself down rather than build herself up. And women need to help other women. They really do.
I completely agree. Because when we can help others, it's back to your fist metaphor. We can help others, and we also can receive. And we all have things that we need. None of us is complete or perfect. And we can both be in that spirit of giving and in receiving when the time comes that we need something. When we put ourselves out there as someone who can give, we can open ourselves up to receiving what other women are giving. It's a beautiful model when people engage in it. And like you said, when they don't, I think they're doing themselves a disservice.
Exactly.
Well, Jean, I'm wondering then, and I just love this lesson of asking for help and being in gratitude and saying thank you and then being open to receiving. It's just such a beautiful way to be personally and professionally. Are there strategies or tips, maybe rooted in that, maybe completely separate, that you have found to be helpful to you during your journey of life, professionally, personally, things that you've done that have really worked that you'd like to share that might be a little more strategic or practical?
Well, certainly practical, and this can be parlayed, you know, from personal life into professional life and back into personal life. The first thing that I have done is set parameters for myself, set my own expectations as to my own benchmarks for my own success, my own creativity, and even as far as clients, who is my ideal client? Who's going to make it past the velvet ropes, so to speak?
Mm-hmm.
To setting boundaries is very easy to do. It's easy to set those parameters. Sticking to them is another thing, and that's really been the learning experience for me, that any time that I've broken a boundary or substantially bent a boundary, I've learned from it, usually from a point of regret, but to just not beat myself up for that. So I would say the first thing is to, especially for women lawyers, have set procedures for your law firm as to what your expectations are, and relay those expectations to your clients too, because it's ultimately you're going to end up having your wheels churning a lot smoother by not having you don't want to have your practice running like the square peg, trying to get in into the round hole. And that's where I was at for a long period of time, you know, taking anything that walked through the door and just not having any parameters to my day. And I was totally client service oriented. And I decided that it was time to rise to a higher level of esteem for myself as a person and a professional. And once I did that, and it took a couple of years to really get that rocking and rolling, things got so much better for me. I became so much happier in my practice and was able to really focus on giving with the highest level of quality. And the second thing that I would say, too, is you don't need to subscribe to being the traditional notion of a professional woman. Smile, laugh, you know, have some freedom in your thinking and in the way that you view yourself. Inject your personality into your life, because ultimately, you know, you can try to put up a facade, but eventually the facade is going to come down. You got to be yourself. And clients, sure, they're hiring you for your competence, but they also want to be around someone who they like and who they enjoy working with. And personality counts. I mean, I completely discount what that woman attorney said to me many, many years ago. I think personality counts for a lot.
Definitely. Exactly. We don't need to leave who we are at the door. In fact, sometimes that is our greatest attribute. That woman who said that about you knew something, was smart about it, because personality makes a huge difference in so much, and it's so much deeper than just, oh, so-and-so is very nice. I think there's personal skills and attributes and characteristics that make us strong women, powerful advocates for our clients, and yet that we can do it in such a way that makes us professional, makes us likable, doesn't burn bridges with, say, opposing counsel or other folks. Just does it in a way that feels good for everyone involved. So having a good personality is completely underrated.
And too, if there's something about, you know, your practice that you don't like, maybe switch to a different area of practice, like I had done. I wasn't so crazy about anymore about doing the real estate. So I really had to do a personal self-inventory and determine where I wanted to move myself into, and the estate planning was the good fit for me. And for other people, they may not want to practice law at all. They may decide they want to own a business or many, many different things, but the power of the education we have enables us to have many choices available to us.
That's right, and we just sometimes need to remember that we do have those choices, that we can do something different should we choose to. And we have the power to make those, and sometimes challenging, but those choices to do something if what we're doing right now isn't serving us.
Exactly.
Jean, this has just been terrific. And I hate to end our time together, but I'm aware of the time, and I'm so grateful for your time and for everything you've shared, your story, your transparency, telling me and the folks who are listening about your journey and the challenges that you've faced and how you've learned from them and come through them and done it all with such a sense of grace and gratitude that is a beautiful thing. I'm wondering if someone wanted to learn more about your legal services, maybe I do, about my guardianships, I don't know, but for other folks too, if there's people who want to learn both about what you do professionally or be in touch with you about how you've done it all. As you said, there's folks like you are giving spirit, and if folks wanted to connect, other women wanted to connect, how would they do that? How would they learn more about you or connect with you?
Well, they can go to my website, which is currently being refurbished, which is JeanGillisLaw.com. That's JeanGillisLaw.com. Or you can email me, GillisLawFirm@gmail.com. Or you can give me a call at 1-888-9-ASK-JEAN. 1-888-9-ASK-JEAN.
Okay, great. Wow, perfect, perfect. I'm sure folks will take advantage of that. So with that, I'm wondering if there's anything else that you'd like to share before we sign off?
I will in the next year or two. This is my big picture plan. I'm going to be writing a book about what happened with my father's experiences. A plan for all seasons. Why you need an estate plan at every stage of your life, and again, just constantly, keeping my mind open to new possibilities and sharing those with others.
That's great. We'll definitely be on the lookout for that. And I think, again, anything you can do to remind people about the importance of making these decisions and being proactive in making these choices, it does families such a great service, a service that we push to the back of our minds. But when we can take care of these things in advance, it saves so much grief and so many of the struggles that you personally experienced. So thank you for using your life story and your life experience to benefit others.
Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to further spread my mission.
My pleasure. Very much my pleasure. And I think this call and what you've offered has been a perfect example of exactly what you, the advice you shared was just to, for me, I made the ask, which sometimes it's uncomfortable to make that ask, but look at the beautiful thing that came from it is you and I connecting and you being able to share your message with countless others, and also to be that mentor, even virtually, to other women in giving of yourself and your time and your advice. So thank you for truly modeling what you're advocating in the conversation today.
Well, thank you, and thank you all for listening. Spread the word.
Oh, we will definitely make sure that the word is out there. So thank you again, Jean, and thank you for everyone who's here on the call today and also listening to the recording or reading the transcription. Any way that you're connecting with this information, I hope it blesses you. I hope that you find something meaningful that you can translate into your life or into your law practice or even both. So until next time, this is Kendra Brodine of Women Lawyers Online signing off and wishing you real success always and in all ways. Bye-bye for now.